We're talking with Dr. Simeon Hine, and we're talking about crop circles and resonant viewing and this very interesting work that he's doing in subtle energy phenomenon. We've been talking about the crop circles of England, but what about the crop circles that Dr. Hine did here in the United States, such as in Kansas or in Washington State? And what changed after those crop circles were created? After he studied it, worked with some crappies, did some late night circling himself, and started noticing a connection between the energy levels or the energy drain on batteries in a particular area where crop circles have been taking place, Dr. Hine decided to try it here in the United States. So what happened? Well, we'll get back to this next with Dr. Hine on the man-made formations and how they create paranormal effects. Next on Coast to Coast AM, my name's Ian Punnett. Back in 1999, reluctantly perhaps, Dr. Simeon Hine started looking into reports that these crop circles had been man-made, not using the word hoaxed, not using the word faked, but just thinking about them in terms of being made by men and women who saw that they had almost a kind of a sacred impact. They even prayed before they went out and helped to create these crop circles, which they saw as being as much of a beacon to the paranormal as it was perhaps a kind of commentary. And yet, back in 1999, when the first electronic relationship to these crop circles was noticed, where the GPS batteries that Dr. Hine spoke of were drained, where other electronic equipment was affected for weeks, it still was a while before you attempted some of these crop circles in the United States, but you saw the same relationship with the electronic equipment that you were using then and the crop circles that you were creating. Is that right?
Well, to some extent, yes, Ian. And when I make my circles, we do it through the Institute for Resonance, and I work with a team. You know, I don't just do this myself, but I work with Ron Russell and sometimes Peter Sorensen. And we've done these in England, too, by the way, with other circle makers. And we get permission from the farmers ahead of time, just to make that clear. We will either pay the farmer to use their fields, or we give them some sort of compensation. And sometimes they just let us use their fields without any compensation, because they're curious, too. Some of these people are really curious, right, about what these crops are. Some of them always suspected people might have been involved, and they want to see if we can even do something halfway decent, you know.
How much do you have to pay them? Because, I mean, you are destroying part of their crop, but how much of their crop is actually affected by that? We're talking about, you know, a few pounds, a few dollars, or?
It's actually, according to the farmers I've talked to, Ian, it's rather small.
Okay.
All they do is set the thresher a little bit lower when they harvest time, and they're able to get almost all of the wheat. When you make a crop circle, you're actually mechanically, the type that we make mechanically,
right,
with boards, you're pushing the wheat down. You're not actually killing it. You're not really destroying it. You're pushing it down to the ground. It actually starts growing back up just a few days later if it's still green. And wheat at the end of the season dies anyway. So if it's later in the season, it'll just mostly stay down. But you're actually not destroying the crop. You're actually just pushing it down into a pattern. It reflects the light differently. That's why they look so beautiful from the air. And really what can cause damage is if we get thousands of people walking in these circles. You know, you can imagine you're walking on the seed heads, and
right,
that does some damage. And a lot of the farmers will put up collection boxes and make a lot more from the crop tourism than they would from just selling the wheat. But I don't think the destruction is really all that much, at least from making the circle, at least not according to the farmers that we've talked about. We have done it in England and in the U.S. And
like the Kansas crop circle experiment, yeah, of June of 2002, I thought this was fascinating that you had a Trek 520 static electricity meter. The circle you made, you did in 5 or 10 minutes.
Right. It was really small. We had permission to use a very small corner of a field, and we made about a 10-foot circle. circle in about, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
All right. So you make this circle using your standard sort of stock stomping board, but you find that the circle changed the static meter by over 2,500 volts.
That's right.
All right, that's not insignificant.
No, that's really something. It's really something. And if you could imagine if that had been bigger and it had been spread over the size of a football field, like some of these circles are, that could really cause accumulatively a rather big effect in ways that we don't totally understand. But as you point out, that was a small circle, but it still created a huge effect on the electrostatic meter, and especially on Ron's camera. He had a professional F3 Nikon camera that, you know, it doesn't leak light, it doesn't make mistakes. And yet here, on those slides that we took of the crop formation, none of the other slides on that roll of film were affected. It's a film camera. There were slides before the slides of that crop circle and slides after. They were all fine. But on a number of the 18 shots he took of that Kansas formation, a lot of them came out completely black, like there had been no picture taken. And the other ones, like you can see from the pictures on the website, some really strange banding patterns of light are moving across the slides. We don't know what that is. It's blurring in strange ways. That camera has never done that, and it never did it again. But there in that crop circle, we know it's man-made because we made it. It's apparently affecting the film in quite an interesting way, in ways that I don't think anyone really totally understands. But there, something is really going on. I mean, what are we photographing there? What is that? Those strange light patterns, they look almost like they're moving across the space there. I don't know what it is, but it's really intriguing.
And you, a student of subtle energy phenomena, if anybody would have an answer, I would expect you would. I mean, what do you think? How do you look at that as being ripples in the dimensions, energy from some other thing, some other past event, or from somebody else that's resonating with what's being done in that circle?
Well, to get at the explanation of why crop circles affect electronics and equipment the way they do, I think you have to look at the entire field, that you have a lot of standing stalks that are planted uniformly by a seed driller. And what you've created by planting those seeds in a very even fashion is a lattice work, very much like you have in a crystal.
Right.
But most of the stalks are standing up. And this is something that Colin Andrews pointed out to me a while back, that a lot of the stalks, when they're standing up, are actually acting like insulators. But when they're pressed down in the crop formation, they're now all touching, and they're actually lying in a lateral, horizontal position, and they're conducting energy or a little bit of electricity. And so what you've got in the crop formation is, while the rest of the field is very uniform, all of a sudden in the crop formation, you have a lot of symmetry from the pattern, the overall pattern, and a lot of coherency in the lay pattern of the weed. And that creates what I call a coherent distortion. In other words, you have this very even field, and all of a sudden you have a star-like pattern or a circle or something. It's almost like a defect, but it's a coherent defect. And so the energy in that area is moving differently than in the rest of the field. And I believe that actually is turning that part of the field into something like a photonic crystal. And actually, it's reflecting the sunlight in a very different fashion than the rest of the field. That's one possible reason why it may do what it does. And in turn, when the light is refracted differently, there's a lot of work right now being done in material science about photonic crystals. We think we may actually be creating those photonic crystals right there in the field, which in turn affect electrons and other quantum effects and create some sort of non-locality. In fact, the same effect we see in remote viewing, this kind of non-local effect where we're creating some sort of communication with something else that we can't see.
Well, that brings me back to remote viewing, and I was just trying to go with then how do you tie in resonant viewing with these crop circles? Couldn't one inform the other?
Absolutely. And people in crop circles have a lot of interesting remote viewing type experiences where sometimes they perceive circles that haven't even shown up yet that summer. Isn't that kind of interesting? They can draw them, and yet a couple weeks later they show up. And these aren't people that, you know the circle makers or anything like this.
They're not the ones that are doing the circle making.
No. They're just people along on the tour or something like that, and they just get this idea in their head. They're in the circle. Lo and behold, a couple weeks later it shows up. There's almost like a grid being created, maybe a communication system within the circle and between other circles, or some sort of cross-dimensional sort of process. And the way it connects to resonant viewing is that it really shows us that shapes have some sort of subtle energy. And when we do our resonant viewing, the procedure we use, we draw these so-called ideograms, these shapes on the page, just to start the session going, just to kind of create a connection to the subconscious. it seems that these shapes have a sort of energy. They're holographic. And in the same way, the crop circle shapes are holographic. They create some sort of connection to other types of processes and energy that we can just kind of imagine. And in that sense, crop formations and resonant viewing are kind of two sides of the same coin. They're interdimensional processes that happen when people relax a little bit and go into their intuitions and activate their subtle senses and connect with other types of energy information that in our normal waking state, we kind of tune out, we push it away. And I believe these sort of processes, this is really what I call planetary intelligence. It's kind of cultivating and activating our own inner intuition and natural intelligence that I believe everybody is born with, but often because of our educational systems and other social conditioning, we don't pay attention to very much by the time we're adults. And so we kind of tune out that natural intuitive information, which I think in some cases can be very powerful and very useful, like it is in crop formations and resonant viewing. You know, when you're doing a resonant viewing session, it's not so much like you're trying to see the object or the person or the place. It's almost like you're getting out of your own way, and then it just happens spontaneously. So these are both very spontaneous, natural processes, which I think are very encouraging because they show us that if we access our own natural abilities and the natural energies of the earth, we have a lot of energy and resources available to us that can sustain us and get us through the next couple centuries past the time when we don't have fossil fuels and things like that anymore. So it's almost like, for me, like the edge of a new paradigm. And for a lot of other people researching this, there's like a new paradigm here, new types of energy, new types of information. And it actually, to get to that information, we have to go inside ourselves deeper. We don't can't access it mechanistically from the outside. We have to go get to it from the inside, from our own awareness and our own intelligence, which is really naturally there. We just have to cultivate it more. And that's what I call planetary intelligence.
If you're seeking, if you see this rise in aesthetic electricity in a given area, 2,500 volts compared to, you know, readings in the rest of the wheat field, then you are getting sort of a quantifiable response. It isn't just a matter of going inside of oneself. You are seeing a kind of causal relationship between crop circles and this, as you call it, natural energy. Why can't we imagine being able to harness that in a purely mechanistic external way?
No, you're right, Ian. We will harness it one day. I'm absolutely confident of that. And we can quantify it. We can measure it. We can look at it scientifically if we want. What I'm suggesting is that the way to get there isn't from a mechanistic point of view. In other words, when you go out to make a circle, you have to intuitively feel, well, which part of the field should the circle go in? And how big should it be? And what sort of pattern should we make? A lot of the time, that comes from people's subconscious. They don't even know exactly how the pattern's going to look until they're done making it. They're like artists. And so what I'm suggesting is that that sort of power is connected to our own intuition rather than some sort of formula that we can know ahead of time.
Right.
It's more that it's something naturally available to us. And when we kind of get out of our way and let that process happen, that's when we get a lot of energy coming out of that circle, some static changes, you know, in the case of the Kansas circle, 2,500 volts. Right. Now, that's a lot of energy. And I kind of imagine the day when we're paying farmers to grow wheat as an energy source, not just as a food supply, but maybe if we understand what it is about these patterns that are generating these types of energies, and we don't even know exactly the full potential of this. I mean, our static meter is just measuring one type of charge, but maybe there are other effects going on, quantum effects. This actually could be a case where we're actually seeing macroscopic quantum effects rather than just something that's at the scale of the electron, where the electrons kind of de-localize and they're actually acting as groups in something that's a kind of a new idea recently in physics, but we may be seeing this in crop circles. There's just a lot of possibilities here. People sometimes go into these circles and feel healing effects. So I think we're really at the edge of something where we're just beginning to understand what it is. And it does have a lot of promise as being something that's very valuable and useful to us in the future, a way to tap into the Earth's energy in a non-destructive sort of symbiotic fashion rather than, you know, the mechanistic technology where we have nowadays, which actually leaves a pretty big footprint on the Earth and I think we can see has some drawbacks.
My background is in theology. So as you talk about wheat, I keep kind of relating that to, you know, the Eucharistic purposes that we have in Christianity for bread and for an understanding that wheat and grapes are, you know, God-given, but that man, humankind turns around and takes that and creates something out of the wheat. We make bread out of the grapes. We make wine. And then I keep thinking about all of the references to bread and wheat that exist in the Bible and how interesting that might be, that it ends up being that wheat, just something simple as wheat, that had been there all along, that had been part of our, you know, consciousness when we thought about connecting to something divine, might end up being our salvation when it comes to our energy needs.
I mean, right. It's a really intriguing idea.
So then let's go to the one in Washington. You did this one just last summer, St. John, Washington. Tell us about that.
Well, we knew a farmer that was open to the idea of us making a circle on his land. And we believe this is one of the first circles where the farmer actually made it with us. And you can see the pictures right there on the Opening Minds website. You can see the farmer joined in with us. He was so curious about these crop circles. We didn't quite get the chance to do that in a kind of a leisurely way like we like to really do it very carefully, because the farmer wanted to participate and we kind of wanted to cooperate with him. So he helped, and we didn't quite get the chance to say the incantations we usually like to say. Now, the incantations are important because you're kind of expressing an intent. And, you know, words have energy and power.
Right.
And we believe that, just like we found out, you know, from research in the secret life of plants and so forth, and Cleve Baxter and all that research, you know, maybe the plants are responding to the circle in some way, or especially the intention of the people that go in to make the circle. They're maybe interacting in a way they wouldn't when they're just standing up in a very uniform way. That's another possibility we have to consider. We didn't get a chance to do that in the St. John Formation, but we did get a chance to make a circle, and I got some friends in the area that hadn't, you know, ever made a circle before, and it was kind of a fun experience out there. And the farmer was really interested to see what would happen. Unfortunately, he cut it down a couple days later. And really, I'm talking cut it down. I mean, there was nothing left, even in our formation. He had got the whole thing down. It was harvest time in August, and we didn't get a chance to do a lot of the measurements we like to do over time. You know, in that Devil's Den formation in 99, that circle affected batteries for 3 or 4 days after it was made. So we like to see if we can get this effect and how it kind of fades away over time. It does seem to fade away, and we don't know exactly why. Maybe is it the wheat dries up a little bit? Maybe the people are going into it and changing it. The battery draining effect seems to disappear over time, based on my experience. Though I could be wrong about that. Just on my experience, it seems to happen that way. We didn't get quite a chance to do that in the St. John Formation, but it was, you know, a really interesting experiment to do that and have the farmer, you know, join in.
Right.
And he didn't even ask us for any payment or anything. He was just so curious about crop circles that he just donated the land to us.
And that's cool. Do you notice a pattern in the difference of the energy or the paranormal effect of these humanly created crop circles? Do you notice a difference between those that were created at night and those that were created in the day? And have you ever had a chance to measure any of these crop circles which were not formed by croppies, what ones that might have been formed by something in that other 10 to 20% of crop circles with no human explanation for their appearance?
Well, those are some good questions. And to answer the first one, it seems to me that the effects we're getting mostly happen in the daytime. That's why I suspect that the crop formation is interacting with sunlight. It's almost harvesting light, like a photonic crystal. I think that effect comes from the sunlight hitting those stalks, the different angle they're at, and all the effects, just from the symmetrical shape of the circle. And all the little stalks are kind of like grains in the crystal, in a sense. So I suspect that those interactions come from the daytime. Now, I have gone out at night and measured some of these circles while we were making them with our static electricity meter, and I didn't see any change very much during the nighttime. So it does seem to be affected by whether it's in the daytime or the nighttime.
Well, then couldn't we fairly say then that that isn't a matter of light but heat? And why would we say that's just a change in the heat?
That could be what's going on. You know, that's a good – it's possible.
Okay.
You know, the sun is coming in there. There's heat. There's light. There's all sorts of things going on, and we haven't totally narrowed it down yet exactly.
All right. I want to return that idea of measuring the non-human kind made crop circles. I want to ask Dr. Simeon Hine about that coming up in just a second. You can link up to his website at coasttocoastam.com. At the top of the next hour, we'll open up all the lines and get you involved in this conversation too. But I want to go back to the connection between resonant viewing and these crop circles and the energy that's created by them next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. We're opening our minds with Dr. Simeon Hine, author of a book called A Journey of Extraordinary Encounters, Crop Circles and Resonance. And we're talking about resonant viewing, which is what he does now full time after having been a sociology teacher, getting his PhD in sociology. He's continuing with his scientific study of crop circles and other subtle energy phenomena. And we're just talking about these energies that are created by the crop circles, the ones that we can measure, some of which just the ones we can feel. And so some of it's inward, some of it's external, some of it is quantifiable. And what is in there for us, if it's true that, say, 80%, maybe 90% of these crop circles are man-made, then what can we still learn from them? And we're still allowing the possibility that 10% might be made by something else. But if you're talking about earth energy, Dr. Hine, it sort of seems a little bit like we have to go back to that discussion, which you just kind of touched on briefly, about how these crop circles might be formed by some energy of the earth. If that would that not explain then the connection to it giving off more, you know, wattage or how you're able to pick up on the increase in the energy field around these crop circles?
Well, yes, subtle energy science suggests to us that the earth has its own subtle energy fields, which, by the way, are about 10 times weaker than the earth's magnetic field. They're very difficult to measure. That's why they're called ultra weak forces. So these aren't forces that are easy to measure, but we've always suspected that the circle is interacting with what sort of energy is there in the earth and changing it in some way, almost kind of like that crop circle is like an acupuncture point on the earth. But let me give you an example of that.
That's an interesting comparison. Yeah. I mean, I just had a shiatsu massage, and I know how powerful that one little point can be.
Right, and let's give me a quick example of a circle that was made in the year, I believe it was 2000, in a place called Milton Hill Farms in England, very close to where a lot of the crop circles appear. There was a circle that appeared there around a dolmen. This is kind of a little hill that people made, the Neolithic people made a long time, thousands of years ago. And a group made a Celtic cross around that circle. Four circles connected by an outer ring around this little tumuli. That's actually was a tumulus. It was a little hill. And we actually, I didn't know this originally, but we later learned the identity of all five people that were involved in making that circle. And I was able to talk to them individually. And I decided these were the people that did this. They knew everything about it and confirmed each other's stories. Well, Colin Andrews and an engineer went out there to measure that circle, not knowing, you know, if it was human-made or otherwise. And they dragged a magnetometer across that area all day. And what they determined was that in the four circles that this Celtic cross was made of, that magnetic north no longer pointed into the direction of true north. It was off by about 3 degrees when they were in the circle. But when they were outside of the circle, the compass worked again correctly, and the magnetometer detected normal magnetic readings. The actual pattern of the crop circle changed the magnetic field there. And Colin at the time thought the only way you could do that was by burying magnets in the ground. That there were magnets, very big magnets, not Alinko magnets, but really big magnets buried under the ground that was changing the magnetic field there. And yet, as far as we know, the circle makers that made that didn't bury any magnets. You know, they didn't do anything like that. They just made a formation, and near there it changed the magnetometer. I mean, the magnetometer was reflecting exactly the pattern of the circle, and it changed the magnetic field. Unless we have some other explanation, unless that pattern was there ahead of time and the circle maker subconsciously chose it because it had that pattern, which is certainly a possibility, it's possible that the circle changed the energy of the area. And again, that's what we've seen time and again, that the circle, rather than an energy coming down from the sky and creating the crop circle and creating anomalous energies in the field and all the changes we see in the wheat and the soil, another big possibility is that once the circle is there, regardless of who made it, whether you made it or I made it or ET made it, once it's there, it creates these anomalous effects, including the elongated nodes and the blown nodes and so forth. We've seen those in circles we've made. We made a formation at a place called Cheryl in 2003, and we found some elongated nodes, which I took a picture of, by the way. It's on the
right.
It is, and that's long been considered a sign of authenticity, quote-unquote, but there it is in the circle that we made. So some of those litmus tests that I think some of the researchers thought might have shown a sign of the difference between a man-made and a so-called real formation. They're showing up in man-made formations too.
I think the Churl formation is obviously one of the most intricate that was done by humans. But I love the one that was done, the New Zealand formation. The one that was, isn't that the one that's used on the box set for the Led Zeppelin album? You know what I'm talking about?
Right. That the box set for the Zeppelin collection, that was the so-called key formation from Alton Barnes in 1991, I believe.
Okay.
That long 300-foot formation, which actually a replica appeared last year of that also. But that was the key formation. The New Zealand formation was another formation that was done by Matt Williams for a Japanese TV crew. I think it was Nippon TV. And he basically gave them 30 patterns and said, you pick one of those, we'll do it for you in a couple hours to prove to you that humans can do this.
When True North was off around that Celtic cross, 3 degrees to the west or to the east?
I don't know exactly. I believe it was off to the east, though I could be wrong about that.
That would have religious significance for Christians. And then what can you imagine if there really was a crop formation that was made by somebody or something other than humankind? And what if it had been made by ETs as you described them and it was in the shape of a cross? Can you imagine what would happen?
Oh, yeah. And I suspect this is just a hypothesis that this whole crop circle phenomena is a learning program for humans created by extraterrestrials or something, some intelligence that we don't know about, as a way of teaching us about Earth energies and patterns and sacred geometry. It's like a school.
Is that why you think these patterns just occur to people in the places where they believe they're supposed to put them?
Yeah, because they get the idea to do these patterns, and they've told me from time to time they don't even know why they get those ideas in their mind. I mean, they don't know where the creativity comes from. It's from a very deep place. But they feel compelled to go out and make these patterns. And in some cases, they've gone out in the field at night and they said, you know what? It doesn't feel right. We're not supposed to be doing this. And they go home and another pattern shows up there a couple of days later and they say, look, that's the reason that pattern was a lot better than what we were going to do.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of sculptors who say that their job is not to create a sculpture, but merely to take away what wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah, right. Because the circle is actually, in a sense, an empty space compared to the standing stock.
Right.
Kind of like that.
All right. So we'll break here, and I will get our last part of our conversation between us. We'll tell people again that we'll open up the lines coming up for next hour at the beginning of the top of the hour. But I want to go back to this idea. I really want to try to bring it home for me, the connection between resonant viewing and crop circles, and what can and has been done with remote viewing when it comes to these crop circles. What have you been able to see? What have you been able to focus on? How do you tie those two things together? We'll do it coming up next with Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. Dr. Simeon Hine talking about the crop circles and the resonant viewing, which he teaches at his institute in Colorado, the Institute for Resonance. And in your work, you tie these things together all the time, the idea of crop circles and resonance and this journey that we're on. What can you see when you resonate with these crop circles? How come there are so many questions about them if you can use resonant viewing to understand them?
Well, you know, resonant viewing gives us a lot of information about a lot of things, but it's not always so easy to interpret the results. If you're viewing an event in the future, or you can imagine people 100 years ago viewing something now, they might not know how to interpret the results. They didn't have computers 100 years ago, so if you were viewing a computer back then, you really wouldn't know what it was. Crop circles, in a lot of ways, are paradigm busters. They simply don't fit into any existing paradigm we have. If you think, you know, that they're all made by ET, I've got some friends I'd like you to meet.
Right.
And if you think they're all man-made, there are witnesses who've seen them happen very quickly around strange lights and things like that. So none of the boxes we try to fit crop circles in fit. It won't fit into the existing mechanistic paradigm. It doesn't fit into a three-dimensional paradigm. It's something from the future, and we're grasping at different ways of understanding it. But in the process, we're growing. We're expanding our sense of what we're capable of, our own abilities as humans, and intelligence that exists in the Earth and the universe that we might not have even imagined exist before.
I get that.
Right, so it's really causing us to expand, and that may be the whole purpose.
Okay.
And in the same sense, resonant viewing taps into these deeper intuitive creative abilities, which everybody has, but because of our conditioned, domesticated state that we've all been brought up in, and I think I've spent as much time in school as anyone, and I can say this honestly, there's a lot of things that we don't learn about that we should be learning about ourselves, about how our awareness works. We have a lot of power that we don't use.
Well, I love the thought of that, but allow me to go back to it one more time. We're talking about creating crop circles where you have been able to measure an increase in the energy within that circle, right? Or it changes even something like true north on a compass.
Right, exactly.
All right, so we know that something is happening there within that crop circle, even if it was human created or extraterrestrial created, something is happening in there, right? So we're tapping into a kind of energy that exists that's even bending the magnetic field, perhaps, okay? And yet, at the same time, then, in resonant viewing, you're also tapping into these existing energy paradigms where, as you said, it is almost as though everything is happening all at once, just at different levels. And you can tap into that with remote viewing.
Right, right.
One would think that just, boom, you put those two things together, and you go and you do some resonant viewing within those crop circles, and you would be thinking that you'd just be kind of like exponentially increasing the power of one's resonant viewing, and they would just have that much more clarity about what's happening.
Well, you know, when we have viewed the circles with viewing, we've generally got a lot of extraterrestrial connection, which initially led me to believe that the extraterrestrials were literally creating these circles. I mean, all of them. But now what I believe is that it's humans' ability to contact perhaps extraterrestrial or some other intelligence through making the circles. In other words, the circles are a way to communicate back to the extraterrestrials rather than the extraterrestrials using them, making them to communicate with humans. So it really becomes like a two-way street. And the extraterrestrial connection is pretty strong in our viewing of the circles, but we also get a lot of other energies and my own sessions, things that I don't know exactly how to interpret them in, except to say they're anomalous energies and information. It's definitely something I think you could say, for lack of a better word, an interdimensional process. But let me just say that, you know, when you make a circle, you don't always get the effects every time. It doesn't happen every time. And that's what's interesting about it. One time a circle will appear and it'll affect the magnetometer. The next nine circles you measure won't. Some of them don't have any effect on the static electricity meter, and some of them do. Some of them affect our cameras, and then you could go for a year and not see that effect again. So what's really intriguing about it, it's not repeatable in the way that conventional science likes to see repeatability. That's why it's at the edge of science, because we don't, you know, it's like we're dealing with a machine and we're twisting the knobs around the dials. We don't know exactly what's going to happen when we twist the knobs and the dials around. So it's like a machine from the future, an etheric machine, and we don't know exactly what it is. Is it the shape? Is it the location? The greenness of the crop, the weather, the sunlight, all those factors, and the intent of the people who go into it, even the people who visit it later. All of those, plus I'm sure many more things I haven't thought of, could affect the activity of the circle, the ability for it to do something that we can actually see the result. We don't know, at least I don't know, and I don't think anyone really does, exactly what all those variables are.
Right.
And perhaps when we do, then it'll really be something where we can do it predictably. We can create it every time. And when we can create a circle that drains batteries, maybe we'll know how to create a circle that charges batteries.
Sure.
And we can feed it into the grid. And I'm not saying this to denigrate them and like not to appreciate the wonderful artistic quality of them. It's just there's something else going on there that if we can tap into it, it's a lot like things you read nowadays with the field, the zero-point field, all of that.
Right.
If we can tap into it. But I'm sure it's going to come more through intuition than calculation. At least at the moment it looks that way. Because the circle makers, when they make them, just use their intuition. But, boy, sometimes they get it just right.
Ever had a remote viewing session within a crop circle where you got people together and actually did that within a crop circle?
When we go to England every year, we actually do some viewing training to make people aware of the types of energies they may encounter in the circle. And people have occasionally done some of those sessions in the circle. And
okay.
sometimes you may do it, you know, informally, sit down and kind of let your mind wander.
Right.
And when you do that, sometimes you feel very strange things going on there, things that are hard to describe, contact with some other intelligence. You know, you almost feel like you're being watched when you're in the circle. It's kind of an eerie feeling. I know a lot of other people have had that experience. It's possible that that circle that we're creating, something is actually able to perceive us through the circle as if it's a lens.
Right.
That normally couldn't perceive us. And we can sense that a little bit, almost like when you're being stared at. You get that feeling in the circle. So
I would just think that'd be an interesting experiment to do sometime, is get together 100 of the best, you know, resonant viewers with whom you're associated, and go and create a large crop circle somewhere in Kansas or Washington State or something. You go and create one, and then you have your next session right there.
It's a great idea.
Where it would seem to be there's some sort of weakening in the layers of the matrix.
Yes, right.
Okay. Before we go to phones, what other types of subtle energies do you work with? What are some of the other phenomena?
Well, you know, I'm actually interested in alternative healing methodologies. I practice Qigong and Tai Chi regularly. I do meditation also, just personally. I think those are different ways, easy ways for people to kind of get in contact with those different types of what I call planetary intelligence, you know, different types of natural intuitive abilities where there's an energy there that can be manipulated, like chi energy. So you were talking about the massage you got, the shiatsu.
Right.
That sort of thing
right.
manipulates a chi energy, and there's a lot of value in that. Even you can actually see it from scientifically controlled experiments that people actually improve from that. And there's also the effect of mind intent, of prayer, and that sort of affirmations, the ability of that to for people to heal faster. I think that's a very exciting possibility. People like Dr. Larry Dossey have worked in that field and talk about that. This subtle energy field has a lot of implications. It even goes as far as something that's very intriguing to a lot of people and is on the show sometimes, the communications with people that have departed the earth plane and gone to another place. That's something I think there's some very good evidence for that, and that's certainly something in the future that this could be directed towards.
I think that would be a natural extension into what Art will do on Sunday night with the investigation of EVP.
And those EVP clips are very, very interesting things to listen to.
So all in all, energy at various levels of frequencies, and for that matter, occurrences. Some occur with a higher frequency in some area, and then they are infrequent with a low frequency in another area. They're not predictable. Can't map them out. We can't control them, it doesn't seem. I'm just summing this up. We can create crop circles where there is an effect, and others where we might even repeat the same pattern that was used in another field, but it would not have the same impact that it had on the measuring tools for, you know, the appearance of energy or the increase of energy in an area. And so we can't control this. This is something you almost have to try to get out of your hands a little bit. Doesn't that challenge you as a scientist, that all you can really do is sort of observe, almost more like an anthropologist might, and that you can't actually measure this or turn it into something which can be manipulated very easily?
That's right. To a large extent, that's true. You can't actually manipulate it yet. That doesn't mean someday we won't be able to. But, Ian, it's also a little bit like trying really hard to go to sleep. And some processes work better if you have to kind of relax into them, like resonant viewing. It works with a part of the intuition that doesn't want to be bossed around. And you actually have to work to get out of your way to make it work. In other words, it's like riding a bicycle. You can't think about it too much. It just, you're going to practice and it's going to work. And you're not aware of all the muscles that are making that happen. And a lot of these subtle energy processes are like that. You know, the work they did at Princeton with the random event generator, where they had people sit down and try to make this random generator go towards one or zero. And they did like hundreds of thousands of trials of this. What they found was it worked better when people actually weren't trying so hard. If they had their intent on affecting this random number generator, but they weren't really trying hard to make it change, just kind of had that intent in their mind. We find that this subtle energy field connects a lot better to our subconscious than our conscious kind of linear mind. It's a nonlinear process, and it demands learning skills that we all have, but we have to polish and work up a little bit to get them up to speed.
Well, maybe that's a problem by doing that sort of thing at Princeton. If they'd done that at my college, they would have found a lot of kids who really weren't trying that hard. It would have been happy to show up and not try very hard. You probably had a few of those when you were still teaching, I would imagine.
Sure, especially in my statistics class. But what I'm trying to say is it's a paradox. There's a lot of paradox here. So.
Out of time. Yep. Coming back with our last hour, we'll take your calls next for Dr. Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM.